Good morning, good morning, and good morning, and welcome to yet another episode of Popping Up and Feel the Podcast. Happy Tuesday, co-host, and happy early Thanksgiving. You've been with me a while now, so you know that Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday of the year, not just because the food is good, but I just always enjoy the holiday growing up. Normally got together with my dad's side of the family, and we had a great time. And so I'm looking forward to creating new traditions for Thanksgiving. This year, I'll be spending time with my god sister and her family, and then having a small Friendsgiving with my patent COVID circle plus one, because there's a new addition, my beautiful nephew, Hendrick. So I'm excited about that. And having people over, which is not something that I've really gotten into since the pandemic and since being in a house. Like, I've had small groups, small gatherings, and this will still be small, but it'll be people over here for an extended period of time, so it should be fun. But that's not what I'm here to talk about. I hope that you guys have some Thanksgiving plans set up. I don't believe that anybody should be alone at the holiday, so I hope that even if you're in a situation where you don't have a lot of family near you, that you find a friend, a church member, somebody's mama to take you in and spend the holiday with, because I really do think it makes a difference. And I believe that Thanksgiving really does set the tone for the rest of the year. And so, yeah, don't be alone for Thanksgiving. Anyway, not what I want to talk about today. Honestly, I was watching another episode of Go Figure Insecure and was triggered by the events that were going on. But before I talk about that, I want to talk a little bit or revisit a little bit the conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago about getting free. And the whole purpose of that particular podcast was to express the importance of Black men asserting their right to explore their fullness, the fullness of their being and sexuality, and how oftentimes Black men don't get that privilege. We're often lumped into particular categories based on behaviors and perceptions, and that's just it. That's the end of it. And the most recent episode, actually the last two episodes, but particularly the season finale of Queen Sugar, was like that podcast mixed with the podcast about assumptions personified. Nicholas Ash plays Micah, and Marquise Rodriguez plays Isaiah, and they're best friends, or they've become best friends. They were line brothers. They pledged together at Xavier University, which is where Micah is attending school. And it's interesting because when the characters were first introduced and you started to explore a little bit more of their story, the friendship with Isaiah became paramount because Micah was no longer dating Kiki, his girlfriend from seasons prior. He was having a pretty, an unorthodox relationship with one of his professors. And Isaiah presented as someone who liked Micah. He presented as someone who was gay, who had an attraction to Micah. And a lot of their interactions kind of followed suit, you know? That's kind of the direction I thought they were going. I was like, okay, well, is it going to be a situation where they're going to create where Micah's character is going to be gay or bisexual? Like, are they going to explore that avenue? Because they've already explored that avenue with his Aunt Nova. She's had both female partners as well as male partners throughout the entire series. And then, you know, sections and segments where we've talked about her past and different explorations that she's had, because I think she went to like Tulane. We've seen that. So I was like, are they going to about to explore this for another character? I think Queen Sugar has always done a really good job of exploring these ideas of identity and self-expression, because as you know, Blue, which is Ralph Angel's son, for the first couple of seasons had a doll named Kenya. And Kenya was kind of the personification of the relationship that he wanted with his mother, because he didn't have a relationship with his mom. And, at some point, Kenya was no longer a thing. He didn't need Kenya anymore. He kind of got rid of Kenya. But Ralph Angel found himself in situations having to defend the fact that Blue was playing with a doll, because that's what it was quantified as. It's a doll. He's a boy and it's a doll. And boys don't play with dolls, you know? And I think that Ralph Angel even did a really good job of protecting his son. And even at a point where he allowed outside pressure to dictate that that wasn't acceptable behavior, you know, he learned from that particular experience and grew from that and allowed Blue to express himself the way that he saw fit. So much so that he was surprised when Blue was like, yeah, you know, that phase is over. I'm not a kid anymore. I don't need that Kenya doll anymore, which was really, really funny. But back to the whole story between Micah and Isaiah. So there was recently, Micah's a photographer. He did a pretty much an exhibition at his uncle's spot. He has a spot dedicated for men to talk and have conversation, which I think is really, really great. And Micah did an exhibition there, and there was a picture of him with Isaiah, and it was pretty close. It was pretty intimate. And one of the male farmers reacted adversely to it, to a point where, you know, both Ralph Angel stepped in, as well as I can't think of anybody's name when I need to think of people's name. The uncle. What is the uncle's name? I can see him, but I can't call his name right now. But they both stepped in to basically say, hey, you know, there are different type of relationships. It's an intimate relationship. They're friends. There's nothing wrong with expressing it in this way. And it created some tension between Isaiah and Micah. Micah has stood up for Isaiah before because people have made comments, people in their dorm, people even in their frat have made comments about him being gay. Isaiah has never confirmed or denied any of these comments, but I think part of what's made their relationship closer, Micah and Isaiah, is that there's a safety with Micah. And then in this environment with family, there was this thought process that maybe there was a relationship, or maybe there, you know, maybe there was something kind of going on between them, and it kind of caused Micah to shut down, and it created this rift between the two of them. Micah had a conversation with his aunt Nova, and she basically was like, hey, you know, don't try to force feelings, let your feelings kind of guide you, you know, because he basically admitted to the fact that, you know, I don't believe that I am gay, but there is something there. Not sexual intimacy, but there is something there. There is a connection that I have to him, and I don't really know how to quantify it. And I think it's because sometimes we're often forced, and this is that whole thing about being a Black man, we're forced to call something something. We're forced to label something. We're forced to categorize something, because it's either Black or white, and that's not exactly how emotions and feelings and intimacy work. And so she gave him the greatest advice. They had a conversation. His friend was like, you know, I think we need to talk about what the real deal is. And it came out in the wash that, you know, I feel connected to you. We finish each other's sentences. It's really weird. I'm not sexually attracted to you, but I do love you. And you know, Isaiah's like, I do too. I don't want anything from you. I'm not interested in having sex with you. I'm interested in being your friend. And I think another thing that kind of bridged their relationship, which could be categorized as kind of like a trauma bond, is that Micah was having anxiety, and as a result of the anxiety was having panic attacks related to the events that surrounded him and his altercation with the police department. And Isaiah, being a friend, was there to kind of help him coach through it, breathing, supporting him, the whole nine yards. Kept a secret about him having sex with the teacher. You know, the thing about Isaiah is he never came off as jealous. I think that it's just when we're not used to seeing relationships play out that way, we automatically make assumptions. And I know all too well about being the best friend to a straight guy, because that in terms of proximity, that's the closest you're ever going to get. Not me personally. I've seen it play out. that ain't my thing, but I've definitely seen it play out in other relationships that I've observed from friends, you know, having those conversations with friends who were like, but I really like him. It's like, but you know, he's straight. You know what I'm saying? So it's that whole best friend as a consolation prize. And I wasn't sure if that's what was going on in this particular episode, but it seemed that was it. And it was a total 360. Isaiah was like, you know, hey, I never said that I was gay. I've never confirmed, I've never denied that. Nobody has given me the opportunity to say this is who I am. And whether I am or not doesn't matter. I don't need you to defend my sexuality because it's not something to be defended. It just is. And I thought that was very powerful. And I thought at the end of it, they were able to have a conversation. Conversation is key. They were able to communicate. They both were able to say what they felt and what they were thinking. Micah was able to express the fact that he felt connected to him, but not in a sexual way, but there's intimacy and friendship. And so often we as Black men are denied that intimacy. And like the post that I see on Instagram, I don't know who ever started Every Nigga Deserves, but every nigga deserves to have a loving, intimate, platonic relationship with another man. Women have that privilege all the time. They have the privilege to have girlfriends, to hold hands, to laugh, to hug, to kiss each other, to lay in bed on top of each other. And it never be anything sexual, and it never be miscategorized or misinterpreted or misunderstood. And men don't have that. And I thought it was such a wonderful thing to see this play out in the lives of young men in college who are figuring things out, which is the ideal time to explore and figure out who you are, what you want, and what you need. And it was beautifully played by both of those characters. And I am so thankful to the writers and the producers of Queen Sugar who were able to really display that type of love in a way that people can relate to. So you don't have to walk away from a situation as a straight man saying, I feel intimately close to this person, and it automatically be categorized as a sexual relationship, and now you're gay. So enough about that, because I did want to talk about that. It's a full circle. It kind of brings everything together, and it really impresses upon me the importance of keeping this thing going, because I think that this is something that people need to hear. If people didn't watch it, I hope that people saw my post and go back and watch it. And then I hope that people eventually listen to this podcast and other podcasts so they understand how important it is to allow niggas to have space to be themselves. Because we would be much happier people if we had that opportunity. Enough about that. What I really wanted to talk about today was the last episode of Insecure. And I really don't want to talk about the episode. I want to talk about what happened in the episode. Molly's mom has a stroke. And it's surprising to the family because they didn't realize that she was having health challenges. Prior to this episode, Molly had reached out to her parents and had a conversation with them about estate planning. Like, you know, you guys are getting older. You really need to write down your thoughts, what you want, what you want to do, because we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where, you know, something happens untimely, unexpectedly, and we're not prepared. You know, she's a lawyer, even though I don't think she's into estate planning. She's a lawyer. She's in California. She probably has a good idea about what the laws are. She's just trying to make sure that her parents are well taken care of. They kind of blew it off. Not a big deal, because Black folks have this terrible misconception that those types of things, estate planning, insurance, is all about trying to kill somebody off as opposed to being prepared for the unexpected or the inevitable, or prepared for the inevitable and or the unexpected, because it's inevitable that will pass, but the unexpected things are the things that we just don't know are going to happen and when they're going to happen. So it's best to be prepared for those things as well. So it's an overall plan. And then along the way, if anything unexpected happens, because this overall plan's in place, we're good. They didn't take her really seriously. Her mom has a stroke. They find out at the hospital that her mom had another small stroke. And the conversation is, well, your mom didn't want y'all to worry. Listen to me, Black people. Have this conversation with your parents. This secrecy about one's health has got to come to a fucking end. It doesn't do anything for anybody. If your idea of protection is not having a conversation about your health so that a child finds themselves in a situation where they're blindsided or ill-prepared for the unexpected or the inevitable, is bullshit. Nobody should find out on the day that their parent passed that there is a litany of fucking things going on with them that you had no clue about. People have emergencies. I don't know what medication you take. I don't know where it is. I don't know what it does. I don't know the dosage. I don't know why you're taking it. It's unacceptable. And we have to do a better job of having this conversation. And from us, it's a generational thing. So I think that we're the ones who have to change it. And we have to start having conversations with our parents and be like, look, you don't want anything going on in my life and you don't know what's going on in my life. I deserve the same level of respect in that regard. You know, I understand that your personal medical history is just that, but I don't want to be blindsided. And as a child who lost his mother at 28 years old, who was blindsided by the extensiveness of her health conditions, it ain't cool. It ain't fun. And I'm very thankful that my father. Sorry, that's my TV that clearly wants to talk to you. This is the only problem with having smart devices in your house. You have to deal with that. Give me a sec, I'll be right back. Sorry, that was some completely random nigga shit. But I guess it's no different from riding in the car with Phil while he does the podcast and you hear me honk horns and call people stupid for cutting me off. So I lost my mom very unexpectedly. Yes, she had had some health concerns for a number of years. And I never really knew what was going on or the extent of what was going on or how much she knew. And when she passed, I was unprepared. I was ill-prepared. And I did not have the level of support that I needed to get through that. Not emotional and not financial. So it was extremely difficult. There wasn't any insurance in place. And so like so many others that we've seen, I had to depend on just the goodwill of others, you know, and their willingness to support. But as a young man who was college educated, who worked in the insurance industry, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed that there wasn't something in place. I was embarrassed that I did have to depend on the kindness and the goodness and the goodwill of other people, and that I was held subject to giving my mom the type of service that I could afford, and not necessarily what she deserved. Was it a nice service? Absolutely. Did I make it through it? Absolutely. Were people good to me? Fucking absolutely. But there was a lot that I had to negotiate in that space that I wouldn't wish on anybody else. And some of that is having conversations with your parents about their health. How often are you going to a doctor? Are you getting a physical? If breast cancer is prevalent in our family, are you doing your self-exams? Are you getting mammograms? For men, are you getting your prostate exams? Are you getting your colon checked? Are you doing the things that are necessary to keep you healthy? Because for us in our community, so many of us succumb to very preventable, but if not preventable, treatable issues, health issues, diabetes, high cholesterol, heart disease. You know, a person gets brain cancer, we can't do much about that. You know, a person gets pancreatic cancer, probably can't do much about that. Ovarian cancer, probably can't do much about that. But lung cancer, you know, diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, those things that we do have some form of control over, we got to start having conversations about that. And we have to demand that people relinquish this what they feel is a right to be private about things that don't just affect them, but affect us holistically. You know, I don't know if it's better to know that somebody's dying or for somebody to just drop dead on you unexpectedly, but I would wager that if someone does just die and you have an idea about what's going on with them, there is a preparation that one can do to ready themselves for that. You know what I'm saying? And I just think that we deserve it to ourselves. We deserve it to our family members to be honest about those things, even those things that might be embarrassing. And you ain't got to tell everybody, but there needs to be at least one trusted member of your family who knows everything that's fucking going on so that things can be put in place. Because everybody has all these demands about what they want in terms of their services and how they want things to go and how they want things to be taken care of, but nobody wants to prepare to get those things done. So this secrecy that we hold on to, that we harbor, that we don't want anybody to know that it's our business, is bullshit. It's unhealthy and it's unfair. And I joke about this, but I've said this before. You know, your level of care, if I am in the position of caretaker, your level of care in terms of the willingness of what I'm able to do or willing to do is dependent upon how well you're fucking taking care of yourself. You can't live a life of plunder, doing whatever the hell you want to, and then find yourself in a situation where you are now dependent upon dependent upon others in your family in order to live and to be comfortable, and then have these high expectations about how your care should go. If you have not had a conversation, if you not have properly prepared. Now, I'm not talking about stuff that's unexpected, stuff that you can't control, you know? But it's the difference between the country club or Shady Pines in terms of where you're going. If you are not doing what is necessary, if you're not doing your best and putting your best foot forward to take care of yourself now while you have control over those things. But that's just my aside and my joke. The real is having that conversation and ending this whole idea of secrecy. So when people die, there's all this speculation about what's going on. You know, as a young Black queer, if you die before the age of 35, the automatic assumption is that you've succumbed to HIV/AIDS. That's the automatic assumption. And that's sad. That's sad, you know? And it's because people believe that you've lived this totally reckless life. And if you're dying this young and it's not something tragic or something that was highly publicized, that it must be something that you're embarrassed or ashamed about. And those are things that we need to bring to an end so that when somebody dies, there isn't this shroud of inconspicuousness surrounding the circumstances of their passing. Now, I don't believe it's a situation, because I think the tackiest fucking question you could ever ask somebody is, oh my goodness, well, how did they die? Listen, do your own fucking research. If it comes back void, then you don't need to know. But asking someone how someone died is tacky as shit. But, you know, I've definitely been in a situation where I've had to have what I think is a very hard conversation with members of the family of friends of mine who have passed away prematurely or early, just so that I could get ahead of the rumors and say, no, that's not it. This is what was going on, or that's what was going on. You know, and even though you might think it presents this particular way or presents that particular way, this is what actually is the cause of this person's passing. Because it's tacky, not only to ask, but it's even tackier to put misnomers into the atmosphere about what's going on. And some of that could be cured or helped or healed if we just were more honest with what was going on with us and started having honest conversations about preparing for these things, especially as our parents get older. I mean, even as a 36-year-old man, top of 2022, some type of trust. I already have life insurance, but writing those things down, this is where this is what I want to have done. Do I plan on dying anytime soon? No, I don't plan on dying anytime soon. That has nothing to do with what the plan is for my life. So I want to be prepared, and I want to make sure that the people that I leave behind are prepared. And so that's important. And that's something that we really need to think about moving into the new year. You know, that whole getting your house in order thing. Yeah, that's part of getting your house in order. Having real thoughtful conversations with your family about your health and what you're going to need, so that nobody finds themselves in a situation where they are having to process so much information at one time. Can you imagine being at the hospital and being surprised by the fact that you're already stressed because your mom is ill or your dad is ill, but being surprised by the fact that we're here because not only did she have a stroke today, but she's had a stroke before and I never knew. And for somebody to look at you and say, well, it was a small one and she didn't want you to worry. It's not about me worrying, it's about me knowing, so that I can, in my mind, prepare for whatever comes next. You know, a lot of people die and there's unfinished business. A lot of people don't have the gift that I had, which was to have a very thoughtful, loving, direct, but hard conversation with my mother before she passed, literally the day before she passed, where we were talking about moving forward into the new year and getting insurance and making sure that we were covered, because at the end of the day, it was just her and I. You know, I was her only kid. She didn't have a spouse. And how important it was to set those things straight. I just had the conversation 6 months too late, a year too late, to try to put things in place so that we wouldn't find ourselves in a situation like I was in, scratching and surviving to give her a service that I thought was befitting of the woman she was. I don't wish that on anybody, not even my worst enemy. And so my gift to you, as well as my plea, is that you really start to have these conversations so that you don't find yourself in that situation. I think I've lectured enough. Lastly, I'd like to dedicate this episode to the memory of a really good friend of mine and a listener, a co-host to the show. His mom, Mrs. Doris Mosley, passed away last week. And I got an opportunity to be in her company. She was a great cook. She was lots of fun. She had a magnetic personality. She was extremely warm. And I really appreciate the opportunity to have met her and to have spent time with her. And being that Derek, you know, grew up as an only child, he did have an older sibling, but he grew up as an only child. He had a really, really tight relationship with his mom, and she had recently relocated to Atlanta. And, you know, that's, you know, getting an opportunity to be an adult with your parents is very different from being a child with your parents. And I know that he cherished that time. And so I just want to dedicate this episode to her memory. And I just pray and hope that, having lost a mother, I know how difficult this can be, but I pray and hope that Derek is doing well. And that he is being surrounded with all the love and support that he needs to get through this, and that he knows, because I've told him this privately, but I'll say it publicly so I can be held accountable for anything that he needs. I'm here. I hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday, and I love y'all for real. Peace.